I mean, if I'm going to be writing for a newspaper, I want to write stuff that is seems relevant and important and that might actually inform someone, and then they do something and then it changes the world, you know, like write about some war here or some people who are getting screwed here or there's corruption there, just like not the dog show in Shreveport.
Right. I think that's beautiful.
Thanks, man. What about you?
I thought about doing stand-up comedy.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
You tell jokes? Or I guess write jokes?
I haven't done any of those things yet, but I've started to think about like things I notice are funny. And then I would then go from there. Like I'd write out a game plan first. Do you know
what
I mean?
Which would be jokes, right?
I think you get to jokes, but you need to start.
Like a bigger message.
No, I just mean like get a pen, get a pad.
That's funny, man. You are funny. That's great.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Red String Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my friend and the person I'd most likely want to move in with because his house is very nice, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. It's a little empty right now, but definitely a nice place.
Oh, yeah. Family's gone to Florida now?
Snowbirding it, yep.
Yeah. Well, that must be nice. Get out of the cold and the snow.
Yeah, for sure. It was like -9 today when I went to work.
Jesus Christ.
Tough stuff.
I was at the dentist yesterday. I had to walk there because of winter storm. I didn't want to drive. Anyway, I was talking to my cleaning lady. I forgot the term for it. But we were talking about lake effect winters and how they're so much better because you get the warmth of the lake effect plus a lot of snow, which is really fun. And you don't get that in Minnesota. Minnesota is just cold as shit, and you have a bad time.
That is correct.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Red String Movie Podcast. As always, you can find our show on Friday mornings on podcast services. This is the movie podcast where every movie we watch is connected to the previous one in one way or another, whether it be the same actor, same director, same composer, something along those lines. We're going on in a big string, and we'll see where it leads us. But this week, we are talking about the movie Our Friend that Perk picked out for us. And Perk, why don't you introduce it?
All right, yeah. Our Friend is a 2019 joint directed by Gabriella Cowperthwaite.
Mm-hmm.
I tried my best. Search for the movie, not the director. And it stars Casey Affleck, Dakota Johnson, and Jason Segel. And it essentially chronicles the family of Casey Affleck and Dakota Johnson and their friend, played by Jason Segel, as Dakota Johnson's character descends into a terminal cancer diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real uplifter.
Yeah.
And a fun fact tied to this movie, in a wild coincidence of events, which I'll further discuss later, this week I watched two movies, each with a lead actor who was a lead actor in 50 Shades of Grey. And both of their performances were absolutely fantastic. So I just think that's kind of a neat little tidbit. A movie so horrible to produce people who can actually do their job.
There you go. And one thing I want to mention before we get into it is this is based on a true story. The lead character is this guy named Matt Teague, who is a reporter / journalist, and he wrote an article after this all went down that kind of became a viral sensation, and they ended up making a movie out of it years later. So this is based on true events, and I will say, Perk, I actually ended up reading the article last night after I finished this movie, and they didn't even scratch the surface on some of the horrible shit that happened. I think it would have been too graphic to show in this movie, especially with regards to, like, her physical symptoms. I don't really want to get into it because it's very, very graphic stuff, but
I'll have to read it.
Yeah, I think they did a good job in this kind of adapting the main points of the story. But I'll go to you first, Berg. What did you think of Our Friend?
I was very deeply emotionally affected by this movie.
Oh yeah.
Which I don't think is a surprise. And I thought every performance was near flawless, and the story flowed really well, and I enjoyed the movie as much as one can enjoy this type of movie, but there were some weird aspects that just kind of took me out of it a little bit. Which I can go into a little later if you want to give your thoughts.
Yeah, just briefly, this movie just destroyed me. I don't remember ever crying as much or as hard as I did watching this movie. I was an absolute puddle by the end of it. So many scenes are just so emotionally affecting. I think they definitely achieved their goal, which was to show kind of the horrors of cancer, but and just everything around that besides like what you normally think about, but also just the kindness of a friend in those situations, and just beautiful stuff. I peeked at some critics' reviews because it wasn't super well reviewed, and I think it seems like the main criticism was the time jump stuff. I personally think it worked pretty well. I like to get an extra context for the characters, and I think they use kind of the intermittent time jumps to kind of to reveal information in an interesting way, which I liked quite a bit. I can't get over just how much this movie affected me. It was incredible, and I was crying very, very hard at the end of it. But
I was full on sobbing at the end.
Yeah, because we talked about,
can attest.
We talked on this podcast a few episodes ago about us crying in movies when that kind of started, and normally when I say like I cry a lot, it's normally what I mean is like I'll tear up or have like a few tears kind of roll down the cheeks. I'm not like full body crying. I'm not like making noise, you know. But yeah. This at the end of this movie, when they're saying goodbye and Matt just says like thank you, doesn't cut it, I was just I could not stop sobbing. Like it
broke. That wasn't actually the moment for me. I mean, I was obviously still broken up, but it was when she was fading and they were flashing back to brighter times, and when they take her to the beach and see the birds and all that, that's when I fell off the cliff.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, there's a few, obviously a few, but the two were the goodbye for me. And then also, when Jason Segel's character, Dane, when he's out camping by himself, he needs to get away from his life and his family. And Gwendolyn Christie shows up, which I'm like, oh, I know she does a movie. And she's like, asked to hike with them, and they go hiking for a bit. And then at night, she kind of comes over to talk to him, because she knows like he's not in a good place. And she opens up to him and tells him like, it's okay. Like, you know, you feel lonely now, but you know, it's not going to last that way. I was just, that destroyed me. That, cause I've felt that loneliness, in my life before. And, that fucked me up. But, I think it was a very effective movie. Like I said, I think they did what they set out to do very well.
Yeah, I mean, that, like, kill confirmed, they got me.
They got my dog tags.
There were stumbles that, like, prevented it from being even more, I think.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, so I agree with what you read, apparently. I think the scattered time frame was a problem. I don't think it needed to be. I think if they had done it in a sort of two separate linear structures, where like you have a progression and then a flashback, and then a progression and then a flashback that picks up where the last one left off, that type of thing, I think it would be fine and work just fine. But I think the way that they kind of threw it around in this case, it seemed weird and incongruous at points. And like, obviously, every time you flash back and see her like full of life and everything, it's really impactful. But I think that there's nothing that would have been lost if they had just done it in chronological order.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. Because I like the information we got from those flashbacks, but I think I agree. It would have been better if it was two linear timelines going back and forth between. Because every time it's like, you know, 20, whatever year it was, and then 2 years before or 1 year after that. Like, it always takes a second for you to be like, okay, I got to recalibrate.
Let me just do the math in my head on where we're at. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. Yeah, it does kind of take you out a little bit.
Like, has she cheated on him yet? Where are we mm-hmm. now? We're 1 year prior. That means beep, bop, boop. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. yeah.
I did like that reveal, though, the double reveal of the affair situation.
I think that was not even thinly veiled. didn't catch me off guard, not even a little bit. I maybe that's because I think I'm super clever, but as soon as like Jason Segel, very awkwardly, mind you, just out of nowhere at the grocery stores, like, did mm-hmm. you tell them about the affair? Like, mm-hmm. that was clearly a shoehorned in foreshadowing
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuck out. And at that point, I was like, that's foreshadowing. It's not going to be the obvious foreshadowing that Matt cheated. Mm-hmm. It's obviously going to be the super twist reveal that she cheated.
Yeah.
It's a biographical story. So, like, she cheated. That's how it went.
Right.
But I think teeing it up like that was... It's not unnecessary, because they had to do something like that, but it was a little bit telegraphed.
Well, that's the thing, is they did do a second thing, which they probably, I'm sure, not thinking, but they probably even need to do that first bit where James Siegel's ship acid. But later, when they're in bed, or he's getting ready for bed, she's like, oh, Charlotte thinks Aaron's cheating on her. And he's like, oh, does she have any evidence? And she's like, yeah, emails, which is like what happens later. He finds an email first.
Yeah.
But like, in that scene, he kind of like looks at her like he has something he wants. It makes you feel like has he cheated yet? Because you know an affair happened at that point. And that was right. where I kind of because I was like, okay, it's 50% is him or her. They're obviously trying to make me think it's him because of the scene when he was abroad. But now this scene where he's like looking at her kind of strange, like he's like, oh, maybe I should tell her. I'm like, maybe he did do it. So I wonder if that would have been enough as opposed to Jason Segel being like, you know, there was an affair. But
actually, maybe, because I remember that scene you're talking about, and I think at that point I had settled on it being that she cheated.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, at that point I was like, oh, emails. Does she have incriminating emails? And
mm-hmm.
I didn't actually put all that much thought into it, but they did tie it back. So it's a nice continuity.
Yeah. There was one other bit of I think was foreshadowing. I haven't thought about it to see if it was, but you remember in the very beginning of the movie, in the first flashback, when Matt's at the office and his boss is being an asshole to him or whatever. But they're talking about a story he wants to work, where he's like, yeah, there was a murder and a woman lost her husband. And now she's has a child. And the guy who's actually going to write the story wanted to have the take of like, oh, like now they have to live on without the father, you know, and how hard that's going to be. Where Matt wanted to be more practical and be like, no, I want to talk about how like the paramedics took 20 minutes to get there, which... Think about it. It feels like kind of foreshadowing, because in the movie they're talking about losing a parent and him not really being comfortable parenting the kids by himself. He's more wanting to be more practical and be like, how do we fix this? I might be reaching really hard here, but I definitely like tagged that at the beginning. I feel like it kind of played out in the movie.
I mean, nothing in movies is an accident. I can't lie and say that I made the same connection you did, but it definitely could be there. All right, yeah, and I had a couple other hang-ups. Like, sure. these are more nitpicks, but I feel they're worth mentioning because they, like, threw me off.
Mm, okay.
Like, kind of took me out of it. So for each flashback, they do a time card to show when it was,
mm-hmm.
but it's, like, the date and one year before diagnosis is typed out,
mm-hmm.
which was annoying to me, because it doesn't make sense until the context is given that he's typing this article at the end,
mm-hmm.
which ties it back just fine. But in the moment when they start doing these flashbacks and it's typed on the screen, that was just a little awkward.
Sure.
And I was not a big fan.
Also, now that you mentioned, they probably didn't even need to write down the year. They could have just said 1 year before diagnosis. Because I wasn't tracking what year it was. Like, actually, I'm so confused right now.
I agree with you.
They could have just said 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, the movie came out in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So, unless we're talking about, like, an up-to-date type story, it doesn't really matter what year it was.
Right. Yeah, it takes place like, in, like, 2016 or 2017, something like that.
Well, I think she dies in 2014.
Oh, okay. I was way off.
See, like, we don't even know. Like,
yeah.
But the trouble is, like, you can tell by the setting and the technology and everything in it that it's clearly, like, it takes place in the 2010s.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't necessarily need that. You're right. You could just say 1 year before diagnosis. And then you simplify it a little bit. You give us one thing to think about rather than two.
Right.
And then the other thing that bugged me was there's a bit of a montage type moment where she's like starting to break down and she starts throwing plates and stuff. And I'm sure you remember.
Mm-hmm. When she's yelling at Matt.
Yeah, and, when she's yelling at both guys.
Yeah.
During that scene, there is a through-running, intrusive, like, poppy, upbeat Spanish guitar score, which I thought was really, really out of place.
I think...
a very serious scene.
So I think you're right. That was at the tail end of the montage of her completing her bucket list stuff. It's like the Mardi Gras thing and going to the fountain. And there was that whole montage of bucket list. But I agree, there were a few moments that are, yeah, weirdly the music is upbeat, or it definitely doesn't feel like it matches the scene. And I'm curious on why they made that choice. Like, was it to show? Was it to show that this is all like a day to day? Like, these are things happening every day, and it feels like it's going fast. But also, I don't know. I'm grasping straws here. I agree with you. It didn't. It felt off for sure.
Yeah, like I enjoyed the score. It's like a lot of Spanish guitar type sounds, and it's really nice. But there are a few places where it feels very out of place.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of scenes in this movie with no music at all,
mm-hmm.
and they're very impactful, and mm-hmm. like it works because there's music, you know, throughout the rest. But there were a couple scenes where it's like, why do we still have like a C major Spanish guitar going in the background right now? It's
a scene I remember that was like that was when they're doing the book club and a lot of her friends don't show up, so. Dane asked Matt, like, hey, can you go grab sandwiches? Like, well, I thought the friends were going to bring him. She's like, oh, they all canceled. So Matt's like, all right, I can go for a drive. Like, and then music starts playing, like, a nice music. I'm like, oh, he's going for a drive. Like, this will be a nice little thing. But then he sees all of the friends just at the playground, just chilling, because they didn't want to come and be around her right now. And it's like, well, that's really sad. Like, that's really fucked up. Oh, there's, like, having music playing. So, yeah, I don't know. Whatever they were trying to do, I don't think it really came across well in those scenes. I'm not really sure what their goal was with the score there, but
yeah, like there's probably some intent behind it, but it's confusing.
Yeah,
and I feel like the music in a movie shouldn't add a layer of confusion.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I'm gonna transition to talking about performances in this film, because
sure,
I mean, my god. Casey Affleck is the Hollywood depressed man, mm-hmm. and he's very, very good at it. It works to great effect in this movie. I think he so well shows the fatigue as well of this whole situation, and he phenomenal.
Yeah, Casey Affleck really just he's very solid at the emotionally dulled, dead inside, mm-hmm. like very reserved type character. But he still has the range to take it to the limits. Like, he's got yelling scenes in this movie. He's got crying scenes in this movie, which all don't feel at all broken up.
Yeah. Yeah. He's absolutely incredible. Jason Segel, I think he's kind of transitioned away from comedy, and I'm glad he made that jump, because he's incredible in this movie. He's so good at being the levity with the kids, and just being able to take whatever situation that is going on and just be there and handle it and help out. And just, he's just great. I really, really, and he also just has some very just heartbreaking moments of depression in this film, which, I really appreciate. I like that he wasn't, Like, there was reasoning for him being there besides being their friend. Like, he also was kind of running away from his life that he didn't know what to do with. And he saw an opportunity here to help out people, and they helped him as well by kind of giving him a purpose for a bit. I thought that was really, really well done.
Yeah, I've never seen Jason Segel better. I'm not a big purveyor of his filmography per se, but mm-hmm. I know he was tied up in How I Met Your Mother for like 10 years.
Yeah.
So, and I know a couple of rom coms he's been in. That's about all I've known from him. So to see him play such a dynamic character and entirely dissolve into the character and be a very real, very believable person was really cool. I think it's a shame that this movie wasn't talked about more, because this is like a career redefining role, similar to like, because there have been those over the years, like Sandler was in a sad type drama movie. Steve Carell was like a psychopath billionaire in Foxcatcher. Like, these comedy actors sometimes just flop on their face when they try to do drama, and then other times they just pull something out of the bag that you simply did not expect.
Right.
And not to say I don't rate Jason Segel as an actor, but I didn't think he had it in him.
Right. Well, I think I haven't seen it, and I really, really want to, especially after watching this movie, but this movie was in 2019. In 2015, I believe, he was in a movie called The End of the Tour, where he played David Foster Wallace, being interviewed by Jesse Eisenberg, playing a reporter about Infinite Jest after it came out. And apparently he's phenomenal in that. And that's kind of was his first kind of big dramatic role. So
okay.
Definitely would like to watch that movie after seeing him here. But yeah, and then Dakota Johnson, who we've seen her quite a bit on this podcast already. I've seen her in Peanut Butter Falcon and Social Network. And I think this is easily her best performance. Even after seeing her a bit more now, she's solid, but she's not one of my favorite actors. But after this movie, I'm like, yeah, she's got it. Like, the scene you mentioned where she is just screaming at Matt and Dane about, like, you know, they're taking away your phone and she is, I'm a valid person, that scene really was hard to watch. And just to kind of her descent to confusion with like the, when she accidentally burns her kid with the iron. And like, yeah, it's just, she's fantastic in this film.
Yeah. The main theme through all three performances is just believability.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't see Ben Affleck in a movie anymore without being, that's Ben Affleck. But
yep.
All three of these actors are just so good at playing the character, mm-hmm. and they're so believable. And especially Dakota Johnson, who, yeah, this is a career best performance, probably. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've not seen all of her career, but I'm sure the 50 Shades movies are not near the top. but she just absolutely knocks it out of the park. And some of the, like, when she descends into psychosis, like, some of those scenes are very painful to watch and all too believable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I've experienced some of that with like family members, and it's really, really painful and tough to look at. And she's spot on.
Yeah. Well, and you see the effects of that in the movie with her friends kind of falling away, and it's hard because you get it. It's not right. And you wish that everyone would be there till the end, but it's hard to be around those situations. So like, it's so tragic. And I think they just really showed those parts about cancer that nobody wants to talk about, you know. And even in the beginning, when she first diagnosed, I remember the montage of like all the neighbors bringing food to the house. I remember this, they're all bringing to the door or leaving down like pans of casseroles and stuff and being like, oh, we're here for you, we support you. And I'm like, this isn't gonna last. Like, bringing food is obviously very kind, but it's like the bare minimum. And like when she was heralded as like this like kind of mayor of the community, like she was kind of the central figure in all these people's lives. And they showed that part of all of the really ugly things about cancer very well in this movie, I thought.
Yeah, that scene you brought up about people bringing food and stuff is really interesting too, because it shows like the mentality of people who are like, well, I don't know what you're supposed to do, so I'm going to make a lasagna. Mm-hmm. But then like it shows people who aren't even brave enough to knock. Mm-hmm. Like, they just put a note on a pan and leave it at the door because they just don't know what they would even say.
Yeah. And that was, like, early in her diagnosis as well.
Yeah. Right off the bat.
Speaking of that, I really liked how they kind of recontextualized the very first scene in the movie. The very first thing we see is her talking to Matt and being like, how are we going to tell the kids? And I thought that was going to be the initial diagnosis, I was kind of unsure because she's already wearing, like, a hat, you know? So I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. Seems like she's already had it, but, like, this feels like the first time they're telling the kids. But then going back to it later and it being the terminal diagnosis, and then just watching Jason Segel out on the porch while you hear the kids crying is like, man, it's so good.
I'm not actually sold. I don't know if they needed to do the double back. I guess it gives you two views of the same scene. So it's like neither of them are the full scene. Like, mm-hmm. put together, they give you the whole scene. But I wasn't misled or anything because they, in that first scene, they read about words not to bring up, like, mm-hmm. mommy's going away or, like, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And mommy's going on vacation or, like, so it didn't necessarily throw me for a loop, but I think it's a good note to start the movie on, I suppose. But I think the scene where they tie it back is much better. Just because obviously there's a little more context at that point, but specifically because mm-hmm. that's, in my opinion, the best shot in the movie, is Dakota Johnson talking and the camera's on her daughter's face, and blurry in the background is Casey Affleck, head and hands.
Yeah.
Like, just absolutely broken. And the juxtaposition of this little girl being told her future is entirely shattered,
mm-hmm.
and to just see the reaction of the father that's plastered against is a really, really powerful shot, and I think the best in the movie.
I also want to mention, I really like the older daughter's performance in this as well. I think she was very, like, solid at playing, like, the very, like, hard on her dad and very upset and angry at him all the time, but kind of opening up with JC a little bit. But I thought she did a really good job.
Yeah, no. Definitely, she was outstanding for what she needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And she did have a fairly significant part in the movie, so.
Yeah, no, for sure.
No slouch.
Younger daughter was fine. She didn't have to do a whole lot. But I think she was kind of the more upbeat, you know, kid. But you mentioned that was your favorite shot in the movie. I think I agree. The only other shot I could think of, or I noticed when I was watching it, like, oh, that's a cool shot, was when Matt got back from being away, and he's getting picked up at the airport or whatever. And he's like, she's still mad at me. He's like, Dave's like, yeah, she's still mad at you. And he goes to kind of, like, going to kiss her, and she's like, not having it. Like, okay. And he opens the door and he gets in the car and he closes the door, and then you see her just angry face in the side view mirror. I really like that.
I didn't actually catch that. That's clever.
Yeah, it was good. But yeah, overall, this movie is just, it's incredibly affecting, and I would recommend it with the caveat of, like, I mean, it's going to mess you up, but I think it's definitely worth watching, just to see this true story. That's just really incredible, and I think it shows cancer in a very tasteful but also revealing light. I think I would recommend it.
Yeah, I agree.
Here we go. And then going off of recommendations based on this movie, I don't got much. I got Manchester by the Sea, just because it's easy cop out. It's another Casey Affleck as a lead in a very depressing movie about family, so that's an easy one right there. And then I wrote down Coco because it's the only movie I could think of where I cried this much, so that's my connection there.
Fair. Coco destroyed me emotionally, so I see where you're coming from. My recommendation based on this movie is 50-50, which is a few years old now. It's Joseph Gordon-Levitt is the star, and Seth Rogen is his buddy. And it goes over Joseph Gordon-Levitt getting a cancer diagnosis, and deals with some very powerful and deep thoughts and themes, and has good humor for levity, and talks about the strains on relationships, and it's a very good watch. It's a little bit more positive of a movie than this, though. So maybe if you're looking for some weighty subject matter like cancer, but potentially with a bit of levity, I think 50-50 is a good go-to.
I have a fun fact about the movie, actually. I've not seen it. However, Seth Rogen was on Hot Ones recently, and he talked about it. So the poster for the movie, and the spoiler, the poster for the movie is JGL shaving his head. And apparently in the movie, in that scene, that was improvised on the spot, where he just started shaving his head. And they said to be like, we don't have a second take at this, so we got to just stay in the scene and do it. And they were able to do it. So there you go. A little tidbit for you.
That's cool.
All right, well, let's get into our bonus reviews for this week. And I want to start with Encanto, because, Perk, you talked about it last week. I finally watched it this week. And you said it, you say it was solid, but it wasn't your favorite Disney animated movie.
Yeah. Good, not outstanding.
I disagree. This movie is fantastic. All right? And I'll tell you why. Perk, last week you said one of the things you didn't like about it was that the theme was too obvious of, like, you're special just the way you are. That is not the theme of this movie, in my opinion. The theme of this movie is generational trauma. It's family expectations. It's about and I'm not trying to spoil anything, but there's the grandma figure in the movie, kind of her relationship with the family and kind of the trauma that that causes. And I think that is very, very well done. And I related to it quite a bit. This is not a surprise, but the movie is absolutely gorgeous. Like, the animation is just incredible.
Definitely.
And music is obviously fantastic. But it's a simple film. Like, we talked about one of the criticisms some people had was that there was not really an antagonist. I think it sets out to do just one very simple story about a family and how, you know, people, they think their family's perfect and they realize it's not, and kind of the healing that needs to be done there. And I think they just tell that story very, very well. And I really appreciated it. And I liked it a lot. So yeah, I really, really dug Encanto.
Fair enough. Do you agree with me in my, cause I did not like the ending.
Oh, right, right.
We can be vague, but I'm sure you understand what I'm talking about, why it feels like kind of cop-out-ish.
Well, without getting any spoilers, there's a few ways we can go with that. Here's what we'll do, all right? I'm gonna look at the clock here. We're gonna go spoilers for a minute, all right? Starting now. I liked it, except I didn't want them to get their powers back.
I think that was super lame.
Okay, I'm okay with them building the house and the house being magic still. But I don't like that all the families got their powers back, because I feel like it kind of took away from the message.
It undercuts the theme. I think it's like the idea is that you are a family and you all belong together. It's not what you're given. It's who you have. Like it.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, oops, house is magic again. Everybody got their powers back except
Mirabelle doesn't have them.
Mirabelle still got nothing, but yeah. Now they at least appreciate her when she washes the dishes.
No, I agree with that. The last thing I'll say is I appreciate that every complex movie was solved with conversation, because that's how real problems get solved. And I like that kind of, it's a kind of a different take on a Disney movie, and I really appreciate that. So, all right, spoilers over. If you've already seen the movie there, we talked about the ending. If not, hopefully you didn't get spoiled. Anyway, back to you, Perk. What did you watch this week?
We'll start off. I watched the first episode of The After Party on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about this, because it's pretty star-studded.
Yeah. So, well, it's like pretty bronze star-studded.
Damn, they get shots.
I mean, I'm not wrong. So it's a murder mystery with Tiffany Haddish as the lead detective in an after party from a high school reunion.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the characters gets killed. And there are like 8 or 9 other characters that are at the house. And the way it seems to be structured is that each character gets an episode as like a deposition.
Mm.
And the characters, like the classmates, are like Sam Richardson from like I Think You Should Leave in Detroiters. Ben Schwartz from, is it Ben Schwartz? Ben?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from Parks and Rec, Jean Ralphio, and like Middleditch and Schwartz. Vicky from The Good Place. Like, it's just like
Dave Franco's in there too, right?
Yeah, Dave Franco is like the superstar pop singer who comes back to his lowly high school for the reunion to ego everybody. But yeah, it's a lot of like the like third tier characters from sitcoms. Like, sure. And I think that's a cool premise. Oh, and also the second detective, Tiffany Haddish's partner, is the guy from I Think You Should Leave, who I'm not paying. I hate this game. You all know I hate this game.
What's that guy's name again? Isn't it like...
I don't know. That's the only other thing I've seen him in. But yeah, the first episode was Sam Richardson's, which maybe will give me a skewed view of the show because I love him. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was pretty funny. Not perfect, but I'll have to watch a little more and get back to you.
Okay. Yeah, no, I've heard good things about it. Apple TV is one of the services that I do not have, so I don't really have an easy way to watch it.
Well, see, I've been looking for a good follow-up, because I goobed it because I wanted to watch Ted Lasso, which is one of, like, my favorite shows of, like, the last 5 years. So, yeah. But then I was like, okay, what else? So I guess, like, I got to watch Morning Show at some point.
Mm.
And then I saw ads for this and saw the cast, and I'm like, yeah, I love all those people, so.
There we go. Hell yeah. Staying on the comedy train, I watched Aziz Ansari's new special, Nightclub Comedian, which didn't even know he was coming out with a new special. I saw a clip on YouTube, and I'm like, the fuck is this from? And it's like, oh, it's a new special that came out this week. And fair to say, we're both pretty big Aziz fans here on this podcast. This special is 30 minutes long, and it was filmed at the Comedy Cellar in New York City, I'm pretty sure is where it is. And the people like didn't know he was going to be there, and he just came in and did his set. Here's what I'll say. If you have been watching a lot of comedy lately and you are sick of COVID stuff, I would not recommend this special, just because it's all pandemic kind of related commentary. However, I have not been watching a lot of comedy about that, so I'm not, you know, I'm not at that point. I'm not really sick of it. And I think...
Not spoiled?
No, I think he did a really good job. I think he has some solid commentary, some really funny jokes. It is a mix. Like, he definitely, like, tells a few jokes and then, like, kind of goes on, I don't say a rant, but he has a, like, he goes on, like, a speech for a bit about how he feels about certain things in, you know, modern times. With politics, pandemic, and stuff. And then he goes back into jokes and kind of alternates through those two things for a half hour. And I'm not sure if people like call it preachy or whatever. I overall just really, really liked it. I liked his commentary. He's kind of echoed a lot of things that I've been thinking lately. And some funny stuff in there, which didn't really like go too hard. Like, he makes fun of both sides. I mean, he's obviously left-leaning, but he doesn't fully just rail on Trumpers or anything. So overall, I think it's a very well-rounded little special, and I would highly recommend.
Yeah, I'll definitely be checking that out. As previously established, I'm a big Aziz guy. I love Master of None and all of his specials, obviously. So, yeah, all right. Next up, I got I watched The Old Man and the Gun, which is actually a potential movie we could have branched off this week because it has Casey Affleck in it. I was just doing a little digging, and through the filmography of becoming one of my favorite directors active right now, David Lowery, who has done A Ghost Story, which is an all-timer for me, and he also did this year The Green Knight, which is certainly up there, probably top two or three movies of last year for me. And I just wanted to give him a little more appreciation. So I went through and saw The Old Man and the Gun, which is a movie starring Robert Redford, who plays like a 70-year-old man who just like casually robs banks. And I found out while watching it that I've actually seen it before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and watched it again. Love it. It's just so pleasant. He's just like a very polite gentleman who robs banks. And it's a nice little meditation on a character, and it's a just a little bit less tense of a heist movie and just kind of light, good, easy watching.
It's also, I'm pretty sure it's his last performance. Redford's last performance as an actor.
Is Robert Redford dead?
No, I think he's retired.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to scare you there. I watched the trailer for it. I watched the trailer for it because I almost picked it for us to watch, but it's on streaming easily, so we didn't go for it. But it looks really good, so I definitely would like to watch it at some point.
Yeah, I would for sure recommend it. It's just a super watchable, nice movie.
Yeah.
You got anything else?
I got nothing else. Tell me your last one. You're very interested in this
one. I got one more, and I saved best for last on this one.
Yeah.
I went out to the theater to catch Belfast, which directed by Kenneth Branagh, and is semi-autobiographical about growing up in the late 60s in Belfast in Northern Ireland, because that's when the trouble was going on and a lot of rioting and gang violence between Protestants and Catholics. And this, I think, is going to be plastered all over the Oscars. I think this is certainly on the short list for Best Picture, and I think deservedly so. Just a fantastic movie. Everything about it is really good, even the score, which is done by Van Morrison, who's not a super cool guy, but the score fits really well and is laid in nicely with the times. And it stars a young actor who knocks it out of the park. The father is played by Jamie Dornan from 50 Shades of Grey, as I mentioned earlier, who is really, really good. The mother is an actress I've never heard of, who's actually, she's been in some things I've seen. I just didn't realize. She's fantastic. This movie will almost certainly like sweep nominations, I think. Would definitely recommend. Go out and see it in the theater if you can. I'm not sure what kind of streaming availability you'll have.
Yeah.
These Oscar baity type movies, not saying it's Oscar bait, but
it isn't like, black and white.
Yeah, but it's for a reason. I've listened to an interview with Kenneth Branagh. It's because he sees the past in black and white. Like that's just how in his mind the past is. But there are moments because, like they go to the movies and the movies are in color, because that's something that it lasts to today. So the context is still there with color. So. It's another one of those like black and white movies with sparing color, but yeah, it's a very powerful story about part of the world that we don't hear much about, and just like a slice of life that, and it's told, the main character's like the 9-year-old boy, and it's just like, yeah, there's rioting in the streets and like car bombs, but that girl sitting at the front of the classroom is really cute.
Right.
So it's
if I may, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Would you compare it, or how would you compare it to Jojo Rabbit?
It is not nearly as much of a comedy.
Sure.
But I see what you're saying, and it's similar in that it's like what these atrocities look like viewed through the eyes of a child. But yeah, it's a little more weighty, I think, than Jojo Rabbit. But I loved Jojo Rabbit.
Oh, so do I. Oh, fucking fantastic movie.
And I think equally good performance out of the child actors in both of those movies.
Hell yeah. That's awesome, man. I had never even heard this movie before. You're like, oh, I'm going to see it this week. I'm like, oh, I'll look it up. I didn't even know it was coming out. So
yeah, it was only in one theater around here, and I'm really glad I was able to catch it. Because I really like Kenneth Branagh, and heard some hype around it and was not disappointed, not at all. So.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, we are watching. Now, here's the thing. I was on before the podcast started. I was looking for movies to watch that are connected kind of didn't have any options with the actors because we've already used two of them, and Casey Affleck, I'm sure we'll get back to at some point. But I went composer, mostly out of necessity, which I know we kind of ragged on some of the decisions movie. But I will say, this composer is not just some random dude. This is Rob Simonson, and he's done a lot of shit. He's done he had the new Ghostbusters, he did Foxcatcher, which you mentioned earlier, Perk.
Oh,
this
cool.
Is Spectacular Now, which you mentioned before. This dude has worked. But in any case, I saw a film on his filmography that I've been wanting to watch for a long time, and I have not, which is called The Way, Way Back, starring Sam Rockwell, among others, like Steve Carell and stuff. The Way, Way Back is on HBO Max. Not The Way Back, okay? Not the Ben Affleck movie that came out recently. The Way, Way Back, all right? So that is on HBO Max. That's what we're watching for next week. And until next time, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.